It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell is in the studio with us. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Doing well.
Good.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, let's continue our conversation about executor liability, sometimes called fiduciary liability, and I want to give a couple of examples. One of the most, first we start with the understanding that an executor is not personally liable for the debts of the decedent. In other words, as the executor of an estate, you are not personally responsible for any of the liabilities or issues, if you will, that the decedent could have. You're not responsible for the mess that they might have created during their life.
Right.
Many times just unintentionally.
Mm-hmm.
People will get sick, people will have creditor issues, and then for whatever reason, they end up not living, and they leave behind, if you will, a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes the executor, and sometimes we have executors who will ask this on the front end. You know, if I qualify as executor in this file, will I be responsible for all of the liabilities that I think are lurking out there as a result of this person's death? And the answer is no. The executor is not personally liable. And then the exception to that rule is that if for some reason the executor fails to act according to the law, or fails to act reasonably in the settlement of the estate, then all of a sudden, unfortunately, the executor can become personally liable, responsible. And the way that this sometimes happens, one of the most common examples of this is when an executor goes ahead and pays bills out of what we lawyers would call class of creditor. What is supposed to happen in the state of North Carolina is that there's a three-month period when all of the creditors are able to present their claims. And creditors that present their claims are first of all, known as a class of creditor because they, after all, went to the time, the trouble to honor the statute and file their claim. There then are secured creditors, creditors who hold an interest on the truck or the car or the house or the lot. They're secured creditors. And then they're unsecured creditors, people like credit card companies, you know, your Lowe's bill, your Belk's bill, whatever consumer debt there might be out there. Those, of course, are many times known as unsecured creditors. And after this three-month period, the executor then is able to get together and organize the debts, organize the liabilities, and begin to pay them consistent with the North Carolina statutes. Now, you know, if the executor, on the other hand, just here and there starts paying things because it's the first bill that comes in the mail. Or that's the one that I think should be paid. You know, she had a real fondness towards Belk's. Okay. She was in there all the time and I'd like for that bill to get paid. Well, this is a problem because, again, now what the executor is doing is paying creditors out of class that they might in the administration of the estate.
And that might lead to personal
lead to personal liability on behalf of the executor. That's a very good example of where we are with things, and one of the most common things that we see. If you happen to be settling an estate, and if it is kind of a mountain of debt, then it's very important. Isn't this ironic? But it's very important that you seek legal advice. Our law even encourages that you seek this legal advice by placing the cost of administration, the cost of, say, an accountant, a lawyer, an appraiser, at the top of the list in terms of class of payment.
So you can know what it is that you have and what you owe.
So that you can get advice and get appropriate advice.
Right.
And do things. The law, there's a public policy argument here that is alive and well, which is that we want to encourage the proper settlement of an estate. We want to encourage the payment of the debts consistent with the class of creditor, and therefore we will allow this person to seek professional advice to guide them, and we will allow those payments to go even before the payments to the creditors.
Okay, so again, a person has taken on that role as executor of the deceased individual. So and they go to the house and they see there's an IRS bill sitting there.
Well, and speaking of the IRS, as one would expect, that's a very high class of creditor.
Yeah, right.
Those also go to the top of the list in terms of payment.
But it doesn't mean right away.
No, it doesn't. Not at all. Because, again, it's not as if they could they might be the only creditor in that class.
Right.
They could just be one of a couple of creditors that are in that very high class. And then, of course, they are paid pro rata. That's basically what happens, is that if the assets are not sufficient to pay out each and every one of the class of creditors, then the classes are organized, and then the top ones are paid pro rata, and then down the list, down the class. That's basically the process that one would go through in order to pay the debts of the decedent. Now, another example, another kind of lurking thing out there, because a lot of these are filled with paradox, as I just said. I mean, isn't it interesting that, you know, the estate that has the mountain of debt is particularly maybe the estate where the executor particularly needs legal advice.
Right, right.
Here's another one. An estate where the loved one has gone on to Medicaid for long-term care in a nursing home. And they, in fact, have received benefits under Medicaid. Did I say Medicare before?
No, you said Medicaid.
Medicaid. Well, let me just pause to say so that it's clear. Medicare, which all of our senior folks are on, does not pay for long-term care in a nursing home.
Right.
Medicare. It will pay for some limited amount of time, as our listeners No.
22 days.
Yep. Or up to maybe 100 days
if we're
under physical therapy and that the medical team feels that we will be able to return home. Medicare will continue to pay so that we can return home rehabilitated. But if we are in a nursing home for long term and there is no hope that our loved one is going to be able to return home, they are not under rehabilitation, then Medicare is going to stop paying. And the only way to then pay for that care is either self-pay or, secondly, because the client happens to have a long-term care insurance policy, which is rare, but some do, and lastly, through Medicaid. There's a lot in the news right now about this because Medicaid, by far, is the most significant payer of long-term nursing care across our country. So many of our elderly folks who are in nursing homes are on Medicaid. And, of course, the executor now is aware that their loved one was on Medicaid. But when they interview with the clerks of courts, there are no assets in the estate at that point.
Right.
Or maybe they've been transferred to a trust, Maybe they were transferred to the children years ago, whatever the case might be. But as we know, in order to qualify for Medicaid, there is a means test. Mm-hmm. And that means that the recipient does not have a great deal of assets.
In fact,
and
therefore, not very much at all.
Not very much at all. And therefore, their estate does not have significant assets.
Right.
And so therefore the executor of this estate feels that they do not need to open up an estate. After all, there are no assets to speak of mm-hmm. in the estate. Well, once again, here comes the paradox. The paradox is that absolutely that executor needs to open up an estate because they need to show the state of North Carolina through the estate filings, through the inventories that are required in an estate, that there are no assets in the estate. This is the one last opportunity for the state of North Carolina to look into the estate and to assure themselves that there are no assets. After all, I have a file just this week where a gentleman who is on Medicaid, the daughter called and said, "Cecil, you won't believe this, but my father has just inherited some money from his brother. Mm-hmm. His brother has died, and he has inherited some money. And I'm afraid that this is going to throw him off of Medicaid. Will you help me with this?" So the point here is that the state of North Carolina does not know with certainty that there are no assets in the estate for them to seek reimbursement.
Right.
And therefore, they require the executor to open up an estate mm-hmm. to show them that there are no assets in the estate at the time of death.
More to come in a moment here on this very important issue. If you'd like to call in and ask a question, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Hey, welcome back. We're talking about liabilities and possible liabilities, too, for someone who's an executor, administrator, power of attorney, any number of those situations. We've been talking about that for a couple of weeks, and Cecil has been here to give us some pretty good examples of that.
Yeah, I'm trying this morning in this program particularly to give some practical, very specific examples. And, of course, the one we were talking about just before the break, Ben, is that, you know, the children, you know, would logically and conclude that there's no need to open up an estate for my mom or mm-hmm. my dad or my grandma. They had no estate. They have no
nothing.
Assets, Mr. Harvell. They have nothing in their estate. Why do I need to open up an estate? And of course, the question that has to be asked is, well, you know, did your loved one receive Medicaid? And if they did, then the state of North Carolina has an opportunity to seek reimbursement. And they don't know, the state of North Carolina, that is, the Department of Medical Assistance, who is charged with seeking reimbursement, they don't know that there are no assets in the estate until such time as a filing is made.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some clients, you know, say back, they say, well, but they qualified for Medicaid. My mom qualified for Medicaid, so at
right.
the time she didn't have assets. Why would she have assets now? Well, the answer to that question is what I said before.
Mm-hmm.
Financial circumstances change. There are inheritances. There are things that can occur that create assets for folks after they're even qualified for Medicaid.
Well, and also, Cecil, isn't there, there's a major one that that people, if they declare an intent to return home, they may reserve that home place, and then that becomes recoverable, right?
Well, absolutely. The home place is in the estate and recoverable if it has been left in that posture. If, on the other hand, there's been some planning done and the home place has been placed into different kinds of trust or certain other kinds of appropriate transfers, then the home place may not be in the estate and then it isn't recoverable.
Mm-hmm.
But the executor, again, fortunately, yesterday I just had this question about opening up an estate under the Medicaid with the Medicaid issues involved that I just now have discussed with you, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, those clients just kind of stopped by the office, and I was able to lead them in the right direction. They're not going to necessarily need a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
They just needed a little direction with regard to the fact that, yes, the state of North Carolina is going to make an inquiry, and you probably are going to need to open up the estate. And fortunately, these ladies were asking the right question.
Mm-hmm. All right, this is an area of the law I can think is so confusing for a lot of people, not only because it has its own twists and turns, because we just don't do it very often. I mean, you guys do it every day. We don't.
Well, that's very true. What is very routine and, you know, a daily, weekly occurrence for us, you know, is a once or twice in a lifetime experience
mm-hmm.
for an executor. And we understand that. And we hear that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We hear that, you know, I'm here to see you as a law firm because I want some guidance. I need to know that I'm going to be on track. I feel like that my mom or dad, whoever the decedent happened to be, deserves that everything be done appropriately. I also don't want to cause problems with the other heirs, with my brothers, with my sisters. I want to know that there is a professional at the helm of all of this guiding me so that I don't make a problem. People who talk this kind of language, Ben,
mm-hmm.
of course you would expect me to say this, but these are mighty smart people.
Right, right.
Those are the kind, and those are most of the folks that we see. They are people who want to just make sure that everything is done according to the law. And of course, it is more complex and more detailed oriented than ever,
mm-hmm.
as we discussed last week and the week before. But I've given two very specific examples today of where an executor can unknowingly
mm-hmm.
become personally liable. One, in the payment of the debts of the estate. Just start paying them.
Out of class.
Out of class.
Right.
And number two, the area of the law where there's the interplay of Medicaid benefits. These are two areas where folks would logically think
mm-hmm.
that I am on the right track. And yet many times we find that they are not.
You've said, I remember back actually when we first started this show, and this is some time ago now, you had said part of the demystifying this whole procedure is to let the mail come, let the bills come, let things happen, give yourself a little time to grieve and let things happen. Now, of course, we're in a different age with much more electronic mail, and many things can happen very swiftly, but it's still, the premise is still true, right?
It is true. The U.S. mail still is at the top of the list, Ben, in terms of the best friend of the executor. Once you change the mail of the decedent to your address and you get week after week, month after month, all of the mail of the decedent, you are more than likely going to get a pretty clear picture on the assets and the liabilities of the estate. The other friend of the executor is, of course, the tax return. That's assuming that a 1040 tax return was filed. You know, a lot of times as folks get more elderly, they just don't file their return. They're unable to, or
right.
maybe they're under the filing requirements,
right, exactly.
and they don't have to file a return. But if there has been a return filed, then it is going to be very telling. It is going to lead the executor to the assets. But the U.S. mail is still at the top of the list.
More to come in a moment as we wrap up this subject here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back as we wrap up this subject here, as we spent some time on it, but it is something that I know that you spend a lot of time with clients on, right?
Well, it is. So, Ben, you know, those are two great examples of where executors can unintentionally and unknowingly kind of wander astray, and hopefully that doesn't happen. Again, I've said in our last few minutes here, and I've said this before, just like these two ladies who stopped by yesterday, the two daughters, asking a question or two, you know, just ask a question.
Right.
I mean, I didn't charge those ladies. I just met with them very briefly out in the waiting room, told them kind of the lay of the land. After all, we had served their mother and had a file in our office. So I, as a lawyer, am going to feel some obligation to answer their questions, of course. So, you know, ask questions. We then will tell you, well, now look, you better come on with me into a conference room.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And even at that point, you have the option whether or not you're going to follow through with the lawyer that you're in consultation with, or whether you're just not going to do that, or whether or not you're going to go to a different lawyer. The thing that I'm trying to encourage here is for our executors and our attorneys, in fact, under powers of attorney, our trustees, our guardians under guardianships, to ask questions. You could very much be on track. And if you are, then great. But there are some things out there where even logically, even though your logical mind is telling you that I absolutely am on track, maybe you aren't completely on track with some of these hidden laws in the state of North Carolina that can trick up, if you will, fool, if you will, even the best intentioned executor or fiduciary. So we really do encourage our fiduciaries to ask questions and get answers. It's worth its weight in gold.
And again, these are the kinds of questions that that we've offered for a long time here on the program, and answers to help to demystify this area of the law. But it all, as with many of these things, Cecil, it comes down to planning. Pre-planning, it gets you ahead of the game.
Well, it does. If things are planned ahead, then it's going to make a big difference. If there is a will that talks about these classes of creditors, if there are planning techniques that were made to get the home place, for instance, not in the estate of a Medicaid recipient, these are planning techniques that are very, very useful to clients. But again, we've got to start with asking the questions.
Okay, and again, those questions are may not be at the top of everyone's mind because they haven't done it very often, but it's certainly something that should come up and you should ask before you have to.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and if you want to find out more, you can make that appointment with Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law by calling 252-726-9050, online at harvellandcollins.com at 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.